From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. The cover photo looks at first glance like it could be from another time, a large family that looks like homesteaders standing before Alaskan snow-capped mountains. There's a mountain man with a long white beard and his wife, five young men and a woman on horseback and a gaggle of blonde-haired kids in front, 15 children in all. But something doesn't quite compute because when you look at it more closely, it's a sharp color photo that suggests it's more contemporary. And you start to wonder, how did they get there and what are they doing? It's all revealed in Tom Kazaya's Pilgrim's Progress, a true story of faith.
Wilderness.
Right. But there is a Pilgrim's Progress angle to this.
That is, yes. Indeed.
Pilgrim's Wilderness, a true story of faith and madness on the Alaskan frontier. Tom is a reporter for the Anchorage Daily News, and he had a vacation cabin in McCarthy, Alaska, where this story takes place. So you first became aware of this family as a neighbor?
As a neighbor, I heard about that they were out there, yeah.
What were you hearing?
Well, just that a big family had moved into town and they were stirring things up and kind of moving into the different businesses in town. There were only a couple of little economic niches and that they were, you know, eccentric, that they were kept to themselves, but they were would also be really helpful and just kind of hard to peg. People were really kind of, the town was dividing over them.
Well, eccentric, not unknown in Alaska, right?
No, in fact, it's an area out there in the Wrangell Mountains that prides itself on having on being open to eccentricity and having a little bit of everything out there.
So far, so good. A large eccentric family moves there, but the guy called himself Papa Pilgrim.
Papa Pilgrim, because that's where the Pilgrim's Progress comes. Mm-hmm. And he had been, you know, reading that book to his family for years, and that was he started calling himself Pilgrim. And they were the Pilgrim family, and they would show up at music festivals, and they're gifted musicians and really good-looking kids, and they made a great presentation, wonderful horseback riders. They knew the ways of the woods and the wilderness, and that was their first impression.
So they mingled with the community. They were not entirely by themselves.
No, except that their place that they had bought out there, an old copper mine, was 13 miles out of town, and that's kind of where things started to go weird because he got on a bulldozer one day and decided to open up an old wagon road that had predated, you know, it had been a national park for just one generation. And before that, it had been just, you know, open wilderness like a lot of Alaska had been. And he went in and opened this road up with his bulldozer, and the National Park Service was appalled. You know, you can't just get on a bulldozer and ride through a national park. But the local community, which still had the historical memory of when it was a, you know, before the road was grown over and washed out, was, you know, defending his right to have the access, although it seemed a little bit precipitate to everyone that he would, you know, go help himself to the bulldozer ride.
And how did you first meet Papa Pilgrim, as a neighbor or as a reporter?
I didn't meet him until as a reporter. I didn't live there. You know, I'd been going back and forth to that area for a number of years, but I lived elsewhere in Alaska as a reporter for the Anchorage Daily News, and when I heard about the bulldozer, it seemed like a confrontation that, you know, was one of those moments that defines the historical moment in Alaska. You know, this transition to, you know, from open wilderness to protected wilderness, and what did that mean to the old ways and the old American nostalgia for the past, and this Papa Pilgrim, and, you know, presenting himself very explicitly as the last pioneer family was, mm-hmm. was you know, playing that notion to the hilt.
And attractive to the Alaskan psyche in some ways.
Yeah. I mean, our building a cabin out there in the park had been, you know, a little bit of that back to the land notion itself, and he was doing it to the nth degree with his 15 children.
And we should maybe put a time frame here. We're talking about the early 2000s when these events are going on.
Right.
So eccentric guy with a big family, he drives a tractor through the forest. That's a little bit weird, but not kind of out of the ordinary. You begin to look into it as a reporter. When did other sort of things begin to pop up where you realized there was much more going on here?
Well, going out by horseback out to the copper mine and visiting him out there and visiting his family overnight, there was, you know, it was just kind of weird, the things that he would talk about and the silence of the kids when he was talking. And you know, he said that the kids had never bathed, that, you know, they'd never seen, seen a human body. So when they bathed in their clothes. So, and whenever they, I talked about going away and making friends, did they not want to leave? No, they were convinced that, that they were just blessed to have this isolated life, that this was that they were the chosen ones. And you know, it was very Christian in a sort of fundamentalist reading of the Bible. And they were, you know, waiting for Jesus to come, and he was coming any day. And the kids all believed that. And if any of them ever went out into the community, they went out in twos, Papa said, because that was a scriptural thing. The disciples had gone in twos. And to me, it sounded like the way a cult keeps an eye on members. And there were just, you know, there were no books in the house. There was no mirrors. It was just kind of a strange situation.
I'm talking with Tom Keziah about Pilgrim's Wilderness, a true story of faith and madness on the Alaskan frontier. So at this point, you meet the family and you realize they're really eccentric. They're maybe more eccentric than your average Alaskan is. When does the next penny drop in this story, when the depth of depravity and strangeness becomes more apparent?
Well, the first thing that happened was to go back from my visit out there and start to write these stories about, you know, feature stories about the family and their lifestyle and their confrontation with the park, and to suddenly realize all the strange background that he came from, that he was not the hillbilly that he was presenting himself, that he'd come out of affluence in Fort Worth. And just, you know, I don't know if we can even go into that part of the story,
well,
but it's as strange as the present day story.
We'll skip over it pretty quickly. His first wife was the teenage daughter of John Connolly, the famous Texas politician who died mysteriously. He managed land in New Mexico owned by Jack Nicholson, the actor. He traveled with a Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. There was some connection with Charles Manson in his past.
Even a flashing acquaintance with him, and the whole, you know, breaking into the apartment of John F. Kennedy's mobster mistress. And I mean, it went on and on, and all of this predated finding Jesus and starting this family of 15 children.
Was it hard to find all that stuff out about Papa Pilgrim, the man as he presented himself?
It took some time for sure, but I found out a lot more when I started working on the book. But even for the newspaper, I put enough of that background into the original stories that suddenly I was on, you know, became an outcast, and I felt sort of the wrath of Papa that others had complained about already in the community.
So he was already alienating others, and you kind of also were in that bag because you talked about who he really was.
I went from the good guy to the bad guy and began to feel like what it was like to be, you know, under his influence,
mm-hmm.
Having his vision trained on me, those crystalline blue eyes of his.
Well, these children who weren't allowed to bathe without their clothes on, who were kind of kept apart and separate, did form a bond with another Christian family in the community. And this is when some of what was really going on in this family began to come out.
And that was 2 years after I'd written it. It kind of, they managed to annoy everyone in the community within those 2 years, and they were pretty much banished out to their copper mine away from the town. And finally were taken in their hard winter by another big Christian family, not actually out in McCarthy in the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park, but closer in toward Anchorage, but a rural family, Christian family.
They couldn't hack it on their own. They finally had to just go and live with others.
Well, for that winter, they didn't have the supplies, the mm-hmm. warmth out in their cabin, the feed for their horses, and they were trying to figure out what to do. So this family took them in for a couple of months, and it eventually exploded, as it always did when the pilgrims, they would show up and make just an incredible first impression, and just warm, and you wanted to help these great kids. And then Papa would engineer some confrontation and it would blow up. This family really tried hard not to let that happen. And the kids in the 2 months that they lived together, the pilgrim kids saw another big Christian family that behaved just differently from what they were used to seeing. And it began to open their eyes, but it also drove Papa around the bend. So he eventually tore them away back to the wilderness, and that's when he blew up, and his blow-up was so severe in terms of, you know, beyond the beatings and whippings and the sort of secret sexual abuse that had been going on, with even secret from within the family. It got so bad that it became an open in the family, and the kids finally rebelled.
And Pilgrim's Wilderness begins with the children escaping, like trying to escape from it, the father.
Heading out the two oldest daughters heading into the wilderness on snow machines while the father was away, and the only way out of that valley was down the valley toward town where their father was, and they knew he was going to be coming up the trail, and so they were heading down in the snow machine, and they had brought two white sheets, and when they got partway down the valley, they veered off the trail, hid in the woods, and pulled the sheets over them and sat there listening for the sound of their father's snow machine coming up the trail.
They eventually got out, and the story eventually got out, too, of what was really going on in this family.
Even after they got out and rejoined that other Christian family, it took them months before they could really talk about what had happened. And as soon as they did, the father of the other family took them to the state troopers, and it exploded into headlines at that point.
And it turns out the strangeness that you observed in your visits was just the surface of what was going on. He was sexually abusing his children. He was beating his children. What were the things that were really going on in that household?
Well, there was some pretty terrible, you know, physical abuse, but also psychological abuse. You know, none of the kids, it turned out, had ever learned to read except the oldest daughter. And she found her way to a Bible once trying to see if it was true what Papa had been teaching, that the Bible gives a father one special daughter. And he caught her reading the Bible and beat her for that. And it was only because they had found another Christian family to help them out of it, I think, that they were able to hold on to their faith. It's pretty amazing, you know. From their view, it was God, you know, testing them and bringing them out the other side. And they do have an amazing, the story has an amazing end, that they were able to get out, and that Papa was hunted down. But the hardship that they had gone through was really, really horrific.
He was eventually captured. He was arrested. He was imprisoned, did not live long in prison.
One of his many secrets was how sick he was. And the court case went on for several years before it finally came out in court. He finally pled out, so there was never actually any exposure of the story in court until the sentencing. And then the children were given a chance to speak. And that very dramatic couple of days where they spoke out, described what had been going on in the family. And then Papa got his chance to speak for 3.5 hours. And it was quite a soliloquy of, you know, just a sort of crazy but compelling story of how he saw the world. And, you know, it was him and God against everyone else.
Where was the mother when all this was going on?
Well, she was there. She was in the midst, of course. You know, she was the mother of all 15 children.
Was she abused like the children? Was she terrified?
She was
like
terrified of him. He had been physically really rough on her, but she also feels like, you know, in retrospect, she wishes she'd done more. She, you know, we can all try to put ourselves in her position and wonder what we would do isolated in the wilderness like that. She figured she was, you know, sacrificing certain things to protect other parts of the family and take care of other things. And it was a tough, you know, kind of twisted choice in a way, but it was one that she didn't feel like she had any options.
The abusive father went to jail and eventually died. And what's become of the family?
They're doing amazingly well considering where they came from, but it's really hard. You know, some of them are married and have families of their own, and I think they're turning out to be great kids. They have held on to this Christian faith, and which is not one that I share. And so part of the challenge in the book was to be able to talk about that narrative that they saw as, you know, how they saw it and how I saw it. But they're doing well.
Their faith has actually helped them through this horrible experience, in which faith was used to abuse them and mistreat them.
Yeah, it's kind of, I wouldn't have expected that to work out quite like that. But they seem to see it all as part of this big narrative that written by the, you know, by their Lord.
Has the abuse suffered by the older children differ from what the younger children suffered from, or some of them less damaged, perhaps because they were beneath the wrath?
I think in some ways the older ones might have done better in a way because they kind of fought their way through it and were part of the rebellion. The younger ones were kind of whisked out of it at the end, but they were still kind of in the frame of mind, in the father's frame of mind. And so it's been a bigger education process for them in a way.
It's an astounding story. It's Pilgrim's Wilderness, the true story of faith and madness on the Alaskan frontier. And if you want to hear why Pilgrim's Progress, the book by Paul Bunyan, was part of the story, you'll just have to go hear Tom Keziah speak tonight at the Elliott Bay Book Company at 7 o'clock. An amazing story. Thank you so much for telling it to us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Our program is produced by David Hyde with Arwin Nix. We get wonderful production help from Allie Ferguson and splendid engineering from Bernard Ouellette. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.